Welcome to another edition of the My Tunes podcast, taken from Mark Tiley in the morning at Manx Radio. Now then, my guest this week might like you to have a guitar standing by, as if you listen all the way through, you will in fact get a free guitar lesson from my guest, John Gregory.
Mark Tiley, the nation's station, Manx Radio.
For another week of My Tunes on the Mark Tiley Morning Show with our friends at Shaw Isle of Man. I'm delighted that I finally got hold of a gentleman who's been on my radar for at least a year, maybe more. John Gregory is with us this week. John, thank you.
Well, thank you, Mark. I'm absolutely delighted to be on the show.
Well, it's great to have you with us. There's so much to talk about because a lot of people will have known you because you taught them to play the guitar. A lot of other people will have seen you play the guitar, both here and around the world, and we'll talk about that. You were a journalist, and the list goes on. But I want to start off with the young John Gregory who discovered the blues. How did that happen?
I've got a really wide taste in music, and I think probably my first glimpse into the blues was probably through rock music, like a lot of people. So, you know, listening to Led Zeppelin and Hendrix and people like that. And then I thought, well, who were the guys that they really liked? And then you ended up with, you know, your Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson. And then I went back even further and you end up finally to your, you know, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Mississippi John Hurt, all these great players. So it was really a fantastic and really interesting trek through history for me.
And when you started listening, were you already playing?
No, I was a big music fan before I even started to play the guitar. And maybe it was one of these people. I'm a very different person now, but maybe I thought, oh, you know, this musical talent is something you just have. So I used to write about music quite a lot. And when I say write about it, I'm not talking about the theory side. I'm just talking about how great records sounded and things. But I actually only started playing guitar when I was 21. And I just thought, I'll give it a go. And I literally did know nothing. I think that's where I can relate to some of my students who come to me and they say, well, I've never played before and I don't know how to tune the guitar. I don't know how many strings on it. I'm like, don't worry, because I was the same. And things are going to change very rapidly for you.
And that makes a good teacher, because you can put yourself exactly in their position. Very, very important, I think. So, where were you born?
So, I was born in Salford, Hope Hospital. I think the maternity ward's now since shut, but that had nothing to do with me. And I grew up in a small town called Tilsley, which is in Greater Manchester. It's in the Wigan Borough. And that's where my parents still live and my sister still lives there. So that was in 1976, and as my mum always reminds me, it was that baking hot summer, and she was in hospital with twins, because I have a twin sister. And but I moved, so I started off, I went to school in that area and grew up there, and then I started my journalism career in that area as well.
Because I'm going to say journalism was your first sort of paid gig, if you like, and because you were with the Isle of Man newspapers for quite a while when you came over here, and writing a lot of music reviews for gigs and things.
That's right. I mean, the very first thing I ever did in journalism back in the UK was when I was 15, 16 years old, I had my own music column in one of the local newspapers. So my first love was absolutely music. And I was, you know, I was doing gig reviews, I was doing album reviews. And then the rival newspaper, which actually was just across the road, it was actually on the same street. They then employed me as a news reporter, but I carried on doing the music as well at that point.
And when did the call to the Isle of Man come, and why did it
come? Oh, well, I mean, the Isle of Man, I know you're such a massive fan of the island, Mark, and I'm the same as you. It just transformed my entire life, because where I was working, I'd worked there for 6 years. This was in Lee, in Greater Manchester. And, you know, it was, the job was fine, but it was getting a bit more intense, and really there was the prospects weren't good and things like that. And I was wondering what to do with my future, really. I didn't know whether I'd end up going travelling somewhere. And we got this letter one day in the post at the office, and it was from the Isle of Man Department of Tourism, and said, would you like to come for a day and, you know, write about the Isle of Man. And to my absolute shame, living so close to it, I'd never been before. So I came over, and honestly, within 5 seconds, I'd fallen in love with the place. And it was Daphne Kane, MHK, as she is now, who showed me around the island. Daphne said to me, we were at Craigneys Tea Rooms, and she said, if a job came up over here, would you be interested? And I said, well, you know what? I said, I am looking on moving. And I said, I love the countryside. I'm in desperate need of a change. And I said, this is some place, you know. And about a month later, a job came up. And it was Daphne, believe it or not, who contacted me, sent me the newspapers and said, have a look through the newspapers. And then, you know, and I was like, why is this person doing this? This, what an amazing act of kindness that she's even thought about me. I applied for the job. And I knew immediately when I got offered the job, which was great. Lionel Cowan was still the editor and Joe Overty was the deputy editor then. And they offered me the job on the day. And I said to them, I think it was a Friday. And I said, I know what my decision is. I'm going to be straight on the phone Monday morning. I said, out of courtesy, I'm going to tell my parents first. I said, but put it this way, first thing Monday morning, you'll have a call. And the, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah. Your first choice of music, oh, is so good. Well, they're all good, but this is wonderful. Talk me through it.
Well, the Beatles are a very important band to me and virtually to everybody who's ever lived, I think. My parents, when they were younger, saw the Beatles 3 times. So we heard the early stuff a lot on road trips in the car. But as I got older, I guess, into my teens, maybe just before that, I really got into the later period. And the Abbey Road album, which these tracks are from, is my favourite because to me it is the ultimate swan song. And they just play so incredibly well. The songs were amazing and just so moving. I was going to pick Nowhere Man for a while, then I was going to pick Eleanor Rigby, but I just thought, no, Abbey Road is this great final statement by, you know, the greatest band of all time.
Once there was a way to get back homeward, once there was a way to get back home. Sleep pretty darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby. Sing a lullaby. Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep pretty darling, do not cry, I will sing a lullaby.
Thank you.
This week on My Tunes, I've got a guitarist with me, who's also a journalist. He's also a great teacher as well. And if anyone's doing anything to promote the guitar on the Isle of Man, it is John Gregory.
Oh, well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate that.
It's good to have you with us. I want to talk today about the blues and about your journey with the blues. Because these guys, these early guys, their history is unbelievable. I mean, I was just doing a bit of prep, like you do, good, like a good journalist, reading about Big Bill Brunsey, one of 17 kids. I mean, can you imagine these families and the poverty and what was going on in the 20s? It's a fascinating history, isn't it?
Absolutely. And although, you know, I obviously greatly admire all these people as musicians, as songwriters, but I admire them as well as amazing people. And Big Bill was an amazing person. He was actually born in Arkansas, but then he grew up in Mississippi. And the things he did with his life and the recording career he had and the way he adjusted his recording career, because when he first came onto the scene, his audience was fellow African Americans. And he was playing acoustic guitar. And then he then really helped develop the beginnings of the urban blues or the electric blues and things like that in Chicago, the days before Muddy Waters and things like that. And then he had a even further success going back to the acoustic guitar and touring Europe as a folk singer. He was brilliant at all of it. And he was even a great flat picker as well. I mean, he could do everything. And what a voice.
Yeah. I'm always amazed at how it took, I think I'm right in saying it took a lot of British musicians in the 60s going back to America to really introduce a lot of white Americans to music that they haven't really been aware of.
That's absolutely correct. And yes, of course, there was some white Americans who were aware of this music, but not that many. And when the Rolling Stones went back to America and, you know, one of their first things was to hopefully meet their idol Muddy Waters, which they did immediately when they recorded at Chess Studios. And they insisted on Howlin' Wolf being on a TV show. I think it was Shindig. They really then helped put some of these fantastic influences to the forefront, which was great. And I think there was those icons, the originally blues icons, also appreciated that fact as well.
I'm sure they did. There's a lot of documentaries on that sort of subject. And Hendrix, of course, decided, or I don't know whether it was a conscious decision, but found fame in Britain before he was recognised properly in America, because he knew we probably had a better understanding of what he was doing, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, I was only having that very conversation with one of my guitar students the other day. The fact that, yeah, he'd been playing in New York, but he actually only became a star in Britain. I mean, he'd done a lot of touring in America as part of backing bands for Little Richard and people like that. But he wasn't the front man. The British guys then took Hendrix back and made him a star in his own country,
Yeah. Which
is quite an interesting concept, really.
It is. It is. Now, we're going to play a Bob Dylan record in a moment. Now, Bob Dylan, there's another, use the word journeyman. When did you first start listening to Dylan?
Well, I was definitely in my early teens, and I sort of came across him mainly because probably I was reading stuff about the Beatles and they were referencing him. And also, I think I was probably listening to Neil Young before Bob Dylan, and Neil Young was going on about him a lot. Of course, when you get past at first, the initial shock is maybe the voice because of his unique singing style, the poetry of the words, and I could rapidly see why he was such a big name in music. And then I bought virtually everything he recorded. And I do love, lots of people think of him as this guy from the 60s, but he recorded some great albums in the 70s. And a couple of my favourite albums are the stuff he did in the late 90s, early 2000s, which I think are just as good. I've seen him live, I think it's 3 or 4 times. And I must admit, I love watching him because you're in the same room as the guy who did all these songs. But sometimes it is a case of try and name that tune, because he does everything in a different key. He doesn't play the guitar anymore. And sometimes you're like, is that blowing in the wind or not?
Yeah.
But hey, it's Bob Dylan, you know, what a guy.
Which track have you chosen for us today?
So this is an album track called Love Minus Zero and No Limit from the Bringing It All Back Home album. And I just love some of the words on this. And there's a particular line that I just think is just poetry summed up. And it says, "My love, she winks, she does not bother. She knows too much to argue or to judge." Absolutely beautiful.
Here it is.
My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals of violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful, yet she's true like ice, like fire. People carry roses and make promises by the hours. My love, she laughs like the flowers. Valentine's can't buy her. In the dime stores and bus stations, people talk of situations. Read books, repeat quotations, draw conclusions on the wall. Some speak of the future. My love, she speaks softly. She knows there's no success like failure, and that failure's no success at all. The cloak and dagger dangles. Madams light the candles in ceremonies of the horsemen. Even the pawn must hold a grudge. Statues made of matchsticks crumble into one another. My love winks, she does not bother. She knows too much to argue or to judge. Midnight trembles. The country doctor rambles. Bankers' nieces seek perfection, expecting all the gifts that wise men bring. The wind howls like a hammer. The night goes rainy. My love, she's like some raven at my window with a broken wing.
All this week, my guest on My Tunes is guitarist, journalist, though he's a little less journalism these days, but still at it. John Gregory is with us all this week. Thank you again, John, for coming along.
Thank you, Mark.
A couple of things I want to touch on before we get back to the blues. First of all, depression. You were very open about this. You went through a very bad patch. How did you pull out of it and who helped you?
So, yeah, unfortunately for me, I've had several episodes of depression in my life. And I'm almost over the moon, if that's the right expression to say that. For about the past 10 years, I've had sort of the best health of my entire adult life in that regard. So I feel very, very fortunate. But yeah, I've had different treatments. I still take, I've got no shame or anything about saying this. I take antidepressants, which are basically to try and keep it away in future. There was no root cause with it in my case. I had a really good life. I did a job I loved, which was journalism. You know, I had friends, I had family, I'd have everything. But depression doesn't work like that. I mean, it's like having any other illness. That's like saying, well, if you got cancer, it's because you didn't have a good support network. That's nonsense. You know, it's any illness can grab you at any time. I had some wonderful support over here from GPs, also Noble's Hospital. I had art therapy for a while, which was brilliant, where I just went in a week and it just drew. And it was amazing the progress that I saw from, I guess, week one to the end, where my art did evolve. And also things like cognitive behavioral therapy is a really good treatment for people, because it challenges the particular thoughts you might have about yourself. And I guess I sort of utilize that in a way every day. Like I said, I mean, I'm one of these people, Mark, and I think a lot of people, when they didn't understand when I went through depression, because I'm so much of an optimist in nature that the glass isn't half full. There is no glass, it's just all water. You know, that's my approach to life. I'm very passionate about what I do. I love what I do, and I'm very grateful for the life that I get to lead, you know. So a lot of people, I think, were like, well, you know, what is causing this? And the answer is, well, you know, just, I guess, my brain not functioning correctly. It's as simple as that. And it can affect anybody of any age at any time. And I would say for these people listening who might be going through this, and this is really important to me to say to those people that, you know, you are not alone. I can promise you you're not alone. There is people thinking about you right now. People maybe that you have not even met. There's people who are concerned about your health and well-being. Please put yourself first. You are a very, very valuable human being. We could not have a history of the world without you on this planet. The history would not be complete. So just take every second as it comes, every day as it comes, and seek medical treatment if you feel it's appropriate. Don't be concerned if medication is something that is offered to you. There's also non-medication treatments that may help you as well. But first of all, put yourself first and foremost, and we're all on your side.
John, thank you. Thank you for talking about that, and thank you for those words of advice and comfort. Let's talk a little bit about an amazing guy, Mississippi John Hurt.
Now, you really have got one onto me, one of my favourite topics here. John Hurt is another one of these guys. As a musician, he was amazing. As a person, he was incredible. And his story, I think, is one of the most inspirational stories in many ways. Not just in music, but I think in life, because he was a young guy and he recorded in 1928 at first, and he recorded a handful of records. And the Great Depression hit in 1929 in America, and so therefore the recording opportunities never came back for him until 35 years later, when he was actually discovered. And this is the amazing way he was discovered. One of his records was called Avalon Blues, and a young blues enthusiast called Tom Hoskins heard this record, and he thought, John Hurt could be telling us his hometown there. And he went down to Mississippi, he went down to Avalon, there's one shop there, one store. He went in the general store, he said to the guy working there, do you know where Mississippi John Hurt lives? He said, sure, John. He said, just go down the dirt road there, and it's like the third mailbox on the right. Knocked on his door, and there he was. Nobody actually knew at that point, certainly in the outside world, whether John Hurt was still alive, because he'd not done any recordings. And John Hurt then went on to have this incredible, amazing career as a folk blues singer, and played his first concert in public, in the wider public, was at the Newport Folk Festival. What a story.
Unbelievable story. And let's have a track from him.
Officer, how can it be? You can arrest everybody, but cruel Stagger Lee, that bad man, oh cruel Stagger Lee. Mr. Lyon told Stagger Lee, please don't take my life. I got two little babies and a darling loving wife. That bad man, oh cruel Stagger Lee. What I care about you two little babies and a darling loving wife. You done stole my stuffing hat, I'm bound to take your life. That bad man, oh cruel Stagger Lee. Mm-hmm. 44. But when I spy Billy the Lion, he's lying down on the floor. That bad man, oh, cruel Stanley. Off the jury, what you think of that? Stagger Lee killed Vince Lyon by the $5 studs on hand. That bad man, oh, cruel Stagger Lee. Standing on the gallows, head way up high. At 12 o'clock they kill him, is all glad to see him die. That bad man, oh, cruel Stagger Lee.
Final My Tunes outing for this week with my guest, John Gregory. John, it's time to pick up the guitar, because what I thought we'd do today, as well as have a chat about some of your bits and pieces and your touring and everything that's happening in your life, we'll don't worry, we'll plug everything, but I want to get these guitar lessons going. So pick up your guitar, sir, and I want you to go through, assume, now you know I play the guitar, you know, I do my best, but I want you to assume I was a new student of yours. Where do you begin with someone who doesn't play? Where do you start?
The first thing I would do is say to the student, hey, we've got six strings on the guitar. Right. And then what I do is I number the strings. Now, obviously, the strings are tuned to different notes, but we're just going to forget about that for now. I'll talk about tuning a little later on. The only other thing they need to know for now is that we've got things called frets, and they're the squares on the guitar, and we want to generally avoid the fret wire, which is the metal wire that divides the frets up. So we can think of them as squares, or we can think of them as frets, and we put our fingers on the strings in a particular fret. And we number the frets very easily. One is the furthest away from us. And I maybe tell them one, two and three, frets one, two and three. We can forget about the rest for now. So once they've got the concept of that, and we maybe just play through the strings, either with a plectrum or just with our thumb, either is fine. I give them the flexibility. Then I will go in straight into teaching them a song.
Get them going on a song early. I think that's a great idea.
Well, the reason is because as you know, Mark, and your level of musicality and all this info you know about music and how the guitar works, I think if straight away we say, hey, we're going to learn a scale, or we're going to learn some music theory, it can be very off-putting at first. I mean, all that stuff comes in, it's very important, but what we really want to do is be able to play the thing. So, you know, I'll start to incorporate that in future lessons. But for now, just the sheer joy and the passion of playing the guitar is what the student wants to feel. And the song I still teach on my first lesson, which was a new song when I started teaching many years ago, is Chasing Cars by Snow Patrol.
Really?
Yeah, and I teach them the riff. And what I do, I teach them the riff in open position. So in other words, we're using open strings. And I'll just sort of play
a bit
of this.
Do it for us. Here we go.
So it just sounds like this if I play it up to sort of speed. I'm playing it fast there. Yeah, you got it.
That's beautiful, John. That's lovely.
And what we do is we obviously learn it slower than that, and we go through it. Everybody can learn that. You know, if you said to them before the lesson, they go, oh, that sounds so difficult. But actually, the positions, I'm only playing on the first and the second fret there, and then open strings.
I think that is inspired teaching, and I'll tell you why. Because so many people I know have tried to learn with chords from the get-go, and they can't hold them down, their fingers won't work properly, and they give up. But you get somebody playing that after the first lesson.
Yes.
And they know the song.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that is lovely. Do you ever say, not wishing to say, not show off, but do you ever say, and if you practice hard, you can do this? And then do you play them a little bit of flat picking or something to say, this is where you're going to end up?
I approach every student differently. And if I've got a student who's really, really passionate about it, well, my main thing on teaching, I guess if you said, what's the thing that you do the most is encouragement. So I say to people, listen, the more you play, the better you're going to get, you know. And sometimes some of my students, particularly on the first lesson, will say, oh, can you play us a little something, you know? And I'll play them something. But I'm like, hey, whatever I play, we can learn this. You could play the guitar. You can learn to play the guitar easily, as good as me. You might even surpass me. But what you need to do is to practice and be passionate about it. And you will love the journey.
Well, thank you for joining us this week. I'll tell you what I'd like. We're going to play a track in a moment, your final track of the week, which is a beautiful cover of a Hendrix song, really, isn't it? Fantastic. We'll have that in a moment. You played all over the world. I'm going to talk a lot about where you played. Just amazing stuff and opportunities to be with people and to travel. There is a new album coming in the pipeline, I understand. When are you going in the studio?
In September. I'm going in the studio with Jip down at Ballagroove.
Lovely.
And, we'll get that done in September.
Well, good luck with that. Just play us a little bit of your own favourite finger picking. Now, dear students, this is the teacher showing us what we could get to. Off you go.
Okay, how about this?
That'll be week 18, at least, I think. John, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much. And we'll play out with the you've chosen Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yes, Steve, I could have picked the Hendrix original for this because it's such a beautiful song. But I guess there's two reasons I picked the Stevie Ray Vaughan version. One is from Austin, when he cut his teeth in Austin, certainly, which is my favourite city in the world. And I've been there three times. And the other thing is my tenuous connection to Stevie Ray. I was thinking about this, actually, before I picked this song. Is that I once got to open for the Fabulous Thunderbirds, and his brother Jimmy Vaughan was one of the founders. When I opened for them, Jimmy was no longer in the band, but Kim Wilson was still in the band who fronts them. So, yeah, I've got this little sort of tenuous connection to Stevie Ray, who also, as well as being a great guitarist, had an inspirational story too.
John Gregory, it's been a delight. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Stevie Ray Vaughan and a beautiful interpretation of the Hendrix classic Little Wing. The choice of my guest on this week's My Tunes podcast, John Gregory. Keep coming back for more great guests and whole loads of things happening with the podcast at manxradio.com. And join me if you can for the morning show, Mark Tiley in the Morning, 9:30 to 12, Monday to Friday on Manx Radio.